This is Greg Burr, welcoming you to the Maine Outdoors. I'm sitting in for V. Paul Reynolds, coming to you live from Blueberry Broadcast Studio 7 in Bangor, Maine. In the control booth tonight, we have that master of the airwaves, our technical guru and good friend, Norm Plord. Good to see you, Norm.
Good to see you, Greg. So what do you like? What do you think of this weather coming?
I like the warmer weather.
Keep it coming. And the ice
conditions are, you know, not thick right now. So yep. That means we get an early ice out, Norm. And I'm looking at, I mean, Green Lake's got around 8 or 9 inches. So yep. I'm predicting a right around the 7th of April that the ice is going to go out of that branch green, you know, Beach Hill area.
Yeah, about a week ago I was at Phillips and there was about 10 inches of ice there.
Okay. Yeah, so it won't take long to get, you know, to go. We got rain coming in later on this week. And
that's right.
It's going to go fast. So, yeah. Well, folks, we've got a very interesting jam-packed show for you tonight, so pull up a chair with your favorite beverage and lend an ear. And as always, if you have a question or comment for our show or guest tonight, please call us at 1-800-966-1039. Our program tonight is brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal, the best outdoor newspaper in Maine. Please check out the journal's website at www.sportingjournal.com. We want to remind our listeners that you can hear our show on 103.9 FM Bangor, 101.3 FM Augusta, 95.1 FM Rockland, and on our podcast at WVOMFM.com. And you can now stream us live, right, Norm, from anywhere in the world.
Anywhere in the world.
Love it. Love it. Our guest tonight is longtime District Game Warden Dave Georgia, who is also the Warden Service Historian. Good evening, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We're going to be talking with Dave tonight about the history of the Warden Service. And in keeping with that history, our trivia question tonight is, who was the first female game warden to be hired by the Warden Service? Now, I'll give you a hint. It's not who you think it is. Right, Dave?
Correct.
This person was hired in the early 1900s. So the person who comes up with this answer correctly first will win a Rick Newton Thunder Creek Minnow Streamer Fly. Rick's an accomplished Western Maine fly tire, and his flies are immaculate. I just love them. And this Thunder Creek is a great brook trout fly, and I'll be looking forward to giving that away to somebody tonight with the correct answer. Now, this is probably not an answer that you can Google, so I would say we're going to go through this history tonight with Dave, and the name's going to come up. So if you don't know right now, don't call in. Wait until the name comes up, and then the first caller who calls in will win this fly. But unless you know, unless you've been to one of Dave's presentations, you probably won't know. And this is going to be really interesting stuff for you tonight. But that's the trivia question, and it'll come up later on in the show. All right. Let's see. So, Dave, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that the Warden Service is taking applications to fill warden positions now.
Correct. They are. And I've actually received an email, and they've got an information meeting planned in different parts of the state. If you want, I can read them off. Ashland, Tuesday, April 4th at 6 p.m. Bangor, Wednesday, April 5th, 6 p.m. Belfast, on Tuesday, April 4th at 6 p.m. Gray, April 12th, 6 p.m. Lincoln, April 3rd, 6 p.m. Machias, April 10th, 6 p.m. Newport, April 12th, 6 p.m. And Sydney would be Wednesday, April 5th at 6 p.m.
Good. So, you know, I just have to say, the Warden Service is a great career. Of course, I've been a fisheries biologist for a long time, and one of my first places that I worked was up in Greenville, and I got to ride with the wardens up there, and I loved it. They knew I loved it, and they said, you want to come join the A-team? Why don't you, come join the A-team? And I knew I wasn't a law enforcement guy, but I loved the action that they get into from time to time. If this is a career path that you think that you'd really like, being in the outdoors, you love hunting and fishing and stuff and protecting the resource, I highly recommend that you apply for these positions. So,
best job in the world.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. Good. You never worked a day in your life, right? Because you loved what you did, right?
Correct.
So, and speaking of hiring, the first game warden was hired by the town of Wells in 1645 as a deer reeve. Is that right, Dave?
That's correct.
Okay.
So back when Maine, and I'll spell it M-A-Y-N-E, was still part of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the earliest hunting and fishing laws dated back to 1627, when the colony of New Plymouth created a law that declared hunting, fishing, and fowling should be free. Back when Wells first settled in 1640, come 1645, these men, they had a town meeting and they appointed, now still part of Massachusetts, so we got to give them some credit. This was part the region where the first in the nation to appoint game protectors. And Wells, theirs were known as reeves, deer reeves, and they protected the animals from being slaughtered, overly slaughtered.
Nice. Wow. Yeah, it's great, great stuff. And the first hunting accident occurred in, 1646 at what, Sturgeon Creek in Elliott?
Well, that's down around Elliott, yep. And it's kind of funny if you were to look at how the writing is, you know, they said a fowling piece, and it's P-E-E-S-E is how it's spelled. But he was actually tried. It was goose hunting, and he was actually tried and for misadventure, and he was actually acquitted, and how the sentence says it was set free. So it's, you could tell it's the old English language at
right,
that time.
Right, okay. Let's see. Okay, in 1870, the first water, was it Belfry?
The first water bailiff.
Bailiff.
This is a term that they used to, the position was created to regulate the offshore fisheries.
Mm-hmm. And in 1830, Governor hired 9 moose wardens, one for every county.
In my research, in 1830, there was 9 counties, and it's kind of, if you were to look at the map, Washington County stretches from the top way up by like Presque Isle way, probably even further than that, all the way back down to where it is now.
Okay.
I've got some documentation from the department that says that the governor created the first moose wardens in 1830. That's I'm trying to verify, and so far the earliest I can come up with is 1852.
Okay. Because I have 1852, more wardens were hired with some deputies.
In 1852, basically what happened is that the wardens themselves, they could hire their own deputies. And what's kind of neat about that is that after the governor appoints these wardens here, they in turn could appoint a deputy warden for that could patrol within their own town.
Mm-hmm.
And what's cool about that, it was 12 miles in all directions of the town border. So there's some interesting things here that's kind of really unique.
And in 1830, I'll just go step back a little bit, governor appointed 3 fish wardens.
He did. He appoints 3 county fish wardens that were for the Penobscot River and their tributaries. One of them was actually Francis Blackman from Bradley, which is my area.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of history there with the Blackman family.
Okay.
Actually, Bradley is named after his father, Bradley Blackman.
Okay. All right. And after the Civil War, hunting hit market hunting started by, there was a lot of killing of moose and deer and caribou to send to the Boston market by train, Dave.
Yeah. So right after the Civil War, the market hunting really stepped up. That's how everybody was making their money.
Mm-hmm.
And deer, moose, caribou, for the big game mostly, they were being transported to the big cities of like Portland and then Boston and even as far as like New York.
So, I mean, we had a note in here that in the early 1800s and before, Maine's fish and game were considered basically worthless. I mean, people really didn't realize what we had.
Correct. They didn't. The only fisheries that were really worth anything were the sea run fish, the shad, the LYs, mm-hmm. the Atlantic salmon, and fortunately, a lot of credit has to go to the earlier commissioners that really they came about and saw, wow, our game resources are really being depleted.
Right, right. And see, it's 1867, the first commissioner's report came out from Charles Atkins and Nathan Foster, and they were very interested in fisheries at that time.
Correct. And a lot of credit goes to those fellas, again, for stepping up and really seeing that the fishing game was being depleted.
Mm-hmm. And let's hold that thought for a minute, Dave, and let's break for a commercial.
Well, actually, you've got a caller.
Oh, we got a caller.
Question.
Okay. All right. We'll take the caller first. Caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Ken from Alexander.
Ken from Alexander. Okay. I think I know. Yeah, go ahead.
Name of the female game warden, Julia Neal.
Say that again.
Julia Neal, if I'm pronouncing it right.
I don't think that's
I don't know exactly. I'm not hearing. Can you spell that?
Oh, good Lord.
You said Neal?
Neal, yeah. How do you know Neal?
Okay.
I've never heard that name, but no, that's not who.
Or Deb Palmer.
Deb Palmer? Well, everybody's going to think it's Deb Palmer, and for a long time, even the department credited her.
She was like 78. But.
Yeah, right. But yep. No, there's somebody else that's even a lot earlier than that.
Okay, Ken.
I can't pronounce her first name, but last name was Neal.
Yep.
I thought the first one.
Nope.
How do you, Neal?
No, that's not it, Ken. But
okay.
All right. Thanks for calling in. All right.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let's take a break for a commercial now. And remember, everybody, when the other stations are rocking, we're talking about the Maine outdoors. We'll be right back. Okay. And we're back. And we're talking to longtime game warden Dave Georgia. And he's also the Department Warden Service Historian. And Dave, you're going to be putting a book together with all these facts.
I am. Being the historian, I've come across a lot of interesting things that I think even the department was not aware of. And there's actually I've partnered up with a fellow by the name of Paul Hines up to Lincoln, who has law enforcement experience, and he's a longtime historian buff and genealogist, and he had a grandfather, Albert Burnham, that was a game warden. So he's been interested in the history part of things, and we've teamed up, and we're going to put a book out. And don't ask me when it's going to come out, but
okay.
Sooner than later.
All right, good. I like it. I like that. Now, we were talking, we're just going down through chronologically through time, through history, since, the department started. We left off where, well, in 1880, game wardens were paid how much, Dave, per year?
Okay, so in 1880, the state started to really get their act together, and they hired 60 wardens at that time, and they were paid $25 a year to enforce just the fish laws.
Okay. And let's see, and then 1880, the Department of Fish and Game was established.
Yep, they were established by legislation on March 9th, and 3 days later, two men were caught and convicted of running a pregnant doe down deep snow and killing. They killed her in close season, and they were convicted and paid a $71 in fine.
So it was $71 a piece?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Huh. Interesting. And then in 1881, wardens were paid $25 a year, plus they got half the fine money that they collected?
Yeah. That's pretty much, I think, if you look at history through the country, wardens received half the fine money, and because they didn't, I mean, just getting paid $25 for that didn't go far for putting food on the table itself.
Yeah, I mean that's also an incentive to do your job as well.
Correct.
Not just getting paid and not doing what you're supposed to do or colluding or whatever. Because I think probably some of that happened way back when. But with, you know, getting half the fine money, that's not chump change. So especially back then.
No. There's a commissioner's report of 1881 where the H.O. Stanley, he basically says, game wardens receive no regular salary at all. They are expected to be sustained by enthusiasm alone in game protection, to abandon home and the occupations that give bread to their families and go forth to the forest for the reward of one half of the penalties that they may obtain from captured and convicted lawbreakers, and the sole stirring privilege of shooting on sight any dog which they may observe chasing deer. Wow. Back in those days, they used dogs to hunt deer.
Yeah.
And we'll get further
into
that.
Yeah. And in 1882, fish wardens were made into game wardens as well.
Correct.
They were separate back then.
Correct. And the commissioners, they combined the two, but there was no appropriation was made for more than doubling the work. And outlay under the present law, only $1,500 is allowed for payment of all wardens in 1882. And the commissioners, they actually, here's another cool little thing that they remarked on. It's true that the two departments are inseparable by nature and can never be economically administered as district offices. Each poacher unites the two. The salmon poacher is the river wrecker, the lumber stealer, the deer poacher, the trout thief, and the occasional horse thief.
There you go. Now, around this time, you were telling me that dynamite was commonly used to poach fish?
Yep. I've got several documentations in 1883 where, a stick of dynamite was used in a pool, and 25-plus fish were brought to the surface. And at this time, there was... Dynamite could be readily available through hardware stores, but it was used a lot like on log drives where you'd have a big jam.
Yep.
So they would have to use dynamite. So it was available to those on the different rivers and the different streams.
Sure.
And then the railroads were being built, and the railroad they used dynamite a lot too.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
John Ford talks about using dynamite in his books, and because he was warden,
right?
And the funny story he used dynamite on was there was a deer carcass he needed to get rid of, and he decided, well, you know, let's try some dynamite, and apparently it blew the deer parts all over this person's yard. John ended up having, the owner came out, and John ended up having to clean up the mess.
I think every game warden has a dynamite story. In the days, they don't use dynamite now,
because
right now it was like, at the end of it, they wanted like $1 million per man for a policy to cover such disasters. I have a few of my own. another story, another day.
Now, we want to get into the fallen wardens, Dave. In 1884, we had the first warden that was killed.
Okay, so the department, I met with the colonel and the major in January, and myself and Paul Hines have discovered four additional wardens have been killed in the line of duty. So all this is really new.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to present this to the beings to get them recognized for the fallen officer's wall. But so I'm going to start out with our newest find. It was on November 18th, 1884. Now this is 2 years, 10 days shy of 2 years, to what the department thought were the first two.
Okay.
So this John Bridge Jr., he was up to Northeast Carey House, also known as the West Branch House, a hotel up there to Northeast Carey.
Mm-hmm.
And he had confiscated a canoe and some caribou and hides from a Tom and Charles Nichols. And coincidentally, this Nichols family was convicted of illegally killing moose the year before by another warden. And this Tom and Charles went to Bridges' house and had a heated exchange. Basically, I think over all that, but they wanted the canoe back. And Tom left in a huff with his rifle. And John Bridges' brother was staying at this motel. And he went. The warden went over there, and Tom actually got up on a settee, which is on the porch, and put the rifle on the windowsill and actually shot him right point, you know, right through while he was in the common area of the hotel.
Wow. Gee.
Killed him right there.
Gee. My gosh. Gee. You know, just some horrific stuff that's happened over the years to our wardens. And the next one was in 1886, Dave?
Yeah, again in November, November 8th. And Deer Wardens Lyman O'Hill and Charles Niles caught up with two poachers. They had been tracking them on horseback for 10 days. And they caught up with them up to Hemingway Township, which is today Township 36 off the Stud Mill Road,
yep.
Fletcher Field. And again, there was a log-in house. It was called the Fletcher Brook House. And Calvin Graves and James McFarland, they had a dog by the name of Smoker. And there was some, the wardens had evidence that that dog had been chasing deer. And they attempted to seize the dog, and Graves shot them both point blank. He had a double barrel shotgun, shot them point blank.
Wow. And this Fletcher Field, or Fletcher Brook, flows into the Machias River just below Third Machias Lake, and this is basically just west of Wesley in Washington County.
Correct.
So not to get it confused with, you know, Machias River up in northern Maine.
Right.
And then, let's see, the next one, what do we got, Dave?
Frederick Milliken. Mm-hmm. This was June 1st, and it was on Wood Island outside of Biddeford, Casco Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a couple of fishermen / seal hunters that Howard Hobbs and a William Moses. And they had rowed over to the main shore and partook in a lot of alcohol that night, and almost got thrown in the hoosegow by the local officers, but they talked him out of throwing him in jail, and they came back, and coincidental, June 1st was the first day of the closed season on seals, but Fred and his son met these two men at the boardwalk and said he wanted to talk to him, and they just brushed by him. This is another new find that I have. The department had not recognized this Fred Milliken, but mm-hmm. he went and he put his says he donned his vest with his badge, and the two men went to their home. This Hobbs, he came out with a rifle, and his buddy said, "What are you taking that for?" He said, "Well, I might want to kill a few birds." And just to let you know that an ounce of bird feathers back in that time period was mm-hmm. worth an ounce of gold, the same price.
Wow.
And it was used for millinery purposes for like ladies' hats and stuff. Well, anyways, the warden wanted to check in. He wanted to check his gun, and in the process of doing so, he just point blank shot him right in front of the warden's wife and his child.
Wow.
And then Hobbs went, and after he realized what he did, he actually went back to his place and committed suicide.
Wow. Well, let's take a little break now and break for a commercial. We'll come back and continue on with our fallen wardens. And welcome back to the Maine Outdoors. We're talking with longtime game warden Dave Georgia, and Dave is also the historian of the Warden Service. And we were talking about individual wardens in the Warden Service over the years. And now's a good time, Dave, I think, to mention who the first female game warden was.
Okay, so this is another discovery that the department got lost in their archives. I kept seeing in commissioner's reports around 1902, a lot of the wardens, they would go by like J.S. Freeze, or they would just go by their initials anyways. So, you know, there's an island in the Penobscot River at the Milford Boat Launch, and it's Freeze Island. So I got kind of curious about that, because every now and again I'd find a news article about this Warden Freeze. And come to find out, J.S. Freeze, Mrs. Janine Freeze, is, let me read this article. It says, is today the leading exponent of what women can do with rifle and shotgun, rod and reel, paddle or snowshoe. She holds a license as a registered guide and is rated first class. In addition to this, Miss Freeze holds a commission from the Fish and Game Department as a warden, and she has done work which equals that of any done by the men employed on the warden force. And she is, at her time, was like compared to Fly Rod Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other articles where there's like three women, but she's right up there with her.
All right. Excellent. Until I heard your presentation there at the Penobscot County Conservation Association, I really thought it was Debbie Pallman that was the first game warden.
And most people do.
Warden. Yeah, yeah. So there you have it, listeners. So if you heard that, Janine Freeze is the first female game warden. So the first person who calls in wins a Rick Jordan Thunder Creek minnow. So give us a call. 1-800-966-1039. Now, we have 1913. We had Harry Hilton.
Harry Hilton.
Yep.
This came about, somebody called me and said, have you ever heard of a game warden that had drowned in Moosehead Lake? So they gave me their name. I started researching it, went up to Greenville Historical Society. And basically what happened is somewheres between October 20th, he was found November 2nd, and he was last seen going up Moosehead Lake to work with his little boat, and a storm blew in, and he had been missing for about 2 weeks, and he showed up at Rockwood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Moosehead gets really rough, so I can't imagine being out there when it really, really blew up like that. So.
Right.
And then we have in July 1921...
Yep. Another real young warden, 20 years old, Arthur Deeg, also pronounced Dag. He was canoeing Pocawakamas Falls, the rapids there on the west branch of the Penobscot. And he was actually with Commissioner Willis Parsons' son, also named Willis Parsons. He's not a junior or anything. And Parsons actually survived, but Arthur Deeg didn't.
Okay. Dangerous, dangerous job that you guys do, Dave. I a lot of respect for being out there and putting your life on the line like that. So 19 fallen wardens in all from the history of the Warden Service that you know of right now, Dave.
That I know of. There's two more that have been brought to my attention, and actually the major gave me a packet, came from a longtime retired warden, Gary Pelletier, who has, yep, his family's got a long line of wardens in there.
Right.
But there's, I cannot find the evidence that I want, so okay, I'll keep digging.
All right, good. Now we have a caller. So caller, what's your name and where are you calling from?
My name's Tony, and I'm calling from Chicopee, Mass.
Oh, okay. Wow. Great.
I'm just taking a long shot here. I did do some research on it, you know, while I was waiting. Would it be Tom Pollard?
That is not the name we're looking for as the first female game warden.
Oh, I thought it was the first warden.
Nope, first yeah, female game warden.
Oh, my, wouldn't it be, no, okay.
Nope.
I won't take your time.
That's okay.
Thank
no,
you, sir,
thanks.
Very much.
Thanks for calling in, Tony.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Also in 1921.
Yeah, 1921, 1922 were bad years for wardens dying in the line of duty. October 8th, there was another young warden, Leslie Robinson, and he was with a Lloyd Hoxie, and they were involved in an automobile rollover in a snowstorm in the Ripogenus Dam area. Lloyd Hoxie survived. Robinson actually got pinned, and between the gasoline, he suffered burns and breathing in the fumes. He succumbed to that. Until recently, there was like very, very little information on that, but my research buddy and I we've come up with a few more articles on that. So,
all right.
Yeah.
And then there's one, I mean, they're all just horrific, but this one also, I mean, happened in 1922 up on the border of Quebec, and it just conjures up images of you know, old-time game wardens out there way back in the remote places, and coming across some people that were doing some bad things, and just shows you how dangerous the warden's job is. So what happened up there on the Quebec border?
Well, up the Big Bog, Chief Warden Dave Brown and Mertley Johnson, they had some information about some illegal beaver trapping. And at that time up there, too, there was just a lot of illegal, the Canadians would call, you know, our main moose, and they'd poach our moose and just about everything, because it was such an undeveloped country here in Maine. And they disappeared. They disappeared for quite a long time, and actually they weren't found until the following spring, buried in the ice in May of 23.
Okay.
Yep. And this still remains a mystery. There's information they've actually gone to, they had at the time gone over to Quebec and had interviewed somebody, and to this day, they're still considered to have been murdered, but their autopsies, back in that day, their autopsies weren't as well done as they are today.
Right.
And there's still wardens, I think, that these men perished under the poachers.
Right.
Gun, yeah.
And I mean, do they know how they died?
Well, no, they were found in 3 feet of water.
Okay.
And they were both very experienced. They had walked the whole way up there. Well, I'm going to say they walked. They probably had you know, cars or whatever, you know, the logging trucks and whatever that were up in there.
Right, but, right.
Can I interrupt you for a minute?
Go ahead, sure.
I just want to let the people know out there that the question's been taken care of, because we're getting a ton of calls.
Okay.
And some of them actually had the right name.
Good.
But I just want to let people know out there in the air that it's been taken care of. So.
Terrific. Good.
Great.
I'll look forward to getting that information from you, Norm, of who won Rick's Thunder Creek Minnow. So, good. Yeah, no, keep on going, Dave.
Yeah, so the autopsy, like I said, wasn't done very, not like they were today.
Mm-hmm.
So they were classified as drowning, but they drowned in 3 feet of water.
Right.
Experienced wardens.
Yeah.
It still seems fishy.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And then in 1927?
1927, Lee Parker. He was working with Warden George Hodgkins in the Westfield area up north, and they went to stop a vehicle that was doing some lighting, and this fellow by the name of Harry Wood shot Warden Parker right in the head and killed him while they were working night hunters.
Okay. Yep. And then in 1930.
1930, this is another new find. I got to give this credit to Paul for sure. This is Ralph Cushman, and he lived in Brewer. He worked at the Union train station, for some of us that are old enough to know remember the Union train station in Bangor.
Yep.
You had to check in all your game and fishing game and tag your big game and whatever. But over the years, as he worked there, over the years, living in Brewer, the so-called airline, all the hunters coming from Washington and Hancock County would, as you know, we all get a rapport with our sportsmen, and they would like to stop and see Ralph and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was at the train station when they came through, so she got a hold of him somehow. I mean, they did have telephone then. And he said, "You tell him stay right there. I'll be right over." Well, as he left the train station, heading in Brewer, he was at the intersection of Washington Street and Holyoke Street, and he got T-boned by a Gulf tanker truck. And back in those days, wardens used their own cars, so demolished his car.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't die on scene, but he died 8 weeks later.
Wow.
And how this one got lost in the shuffle for not being recognized, I just don't understand. But it was during the Great Depression time, and initially they were going to go for like a $2,500 settlement, and this got debated in legislation, and it was finally resolved in 1931, and she received $1,500.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, interesting. Yeah. Different times for sure.
Yep. Yep. But these are just things that bring into the colonel and the major to light, and, and hopefully get them recognized, because they gave the ultimate sacrifice.
Absolutely. It should be.
Yeah.
1933.
Yeah. May 13th, Warden Jean-Baptiste Jabert, he was 47. He drowned on the St. Francis River. He was with his nephew, escapes my brain there, his name. I think it's Dennis Daigle. Well, anyways, they were on the Spring River Drive, and the canoe struck a partially submerged log and overturned the canoe, and he struggled. His relative, who was his deputy warden, made it out safely, but he succumbed.
Yeah. Wow. So then we had 1935, Warden Robert Moore.
Yeah, he was a supervisor. He was a chief warden. He was with Warden Lester Hale on October 22nd, 1935, and they were proceeding south on an old railroad, abandoned railroad, Somerset railroad line, in an old car that had been converted to run on the tracks. And while they were crossing a curve in Moscow, another vehicle collided, and Moore was instantly killed, and Warden Hale escaped injury.
Wow. Dangerous business. And then in 1946?
1946, June 3rd, Randall Shelley. He was working with Milton Scribner, and they got their vehicle stuck. And I've been there many, many times. And Shelley was out pushing the vehicle out, and he suffered a fatal heart attack.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, it happened. I've been stuck many times as well. let's see. And then, 1955?
56. 56. August 27th. George Townsend, he was one of our warden pilots, and he had just received a new plane, and he was with biologist Nathan Fellows. Had you ever heard of that name?
No.
So Nathan Fellows, they had taken off from Marinacook Lake in Winthrop, and the plane just stalled, and it crashed in the lake, and it killed both men.
Wow. Yep. And then we had 1968, Warden Lyle Frost.
Yeah, our Lyle Frost, July 1st. He was removing a nuisance beaver dam with dynamite along a railroad bed. And, I mean, obviously when you're dealing with dynamite, that's dangerous in itself.
Right.
But there are certain things that you have to do, and the detonation, the charge hadn't gone off, mm-hmm. and he didn't unhook the wires, so it would make a great
right.
a full connection.
Yep.
And when he went down to investigate that, it detonated and killed him.
And what town was that in? Was that Franklin?
Yes. Okay. That was along that. If anybody travels the Sunrise Bed there is a memorial sticker post there of some sort that shows where that happened.
Oh, okay. All right. So I know we've got a wildlife management area that's
right.
in Eastbrook that's named after him.
Yeah.
So I thought that it happened in and around that area.
Yeah, in that area. I'm trying to remember if it's actually in Franklin or
probably,
I think it's Franklin.
It's probably Franklin because
yeah, I think
because that whole rail trail and the old railroad line goes through in Franklin there.
Right.
So, okay. And then in 1972.
Yeah. Richard Varney, another pilot. He was taken off at the fishing game plane base again on Marana Cook Lake in Winthrop. Mm-hmm. And he was in a helicopter. And the engine failed, and he crashed in about 15 feet of water. And he managed to get out of the chopper, but he ended up drowning. Probably in less than 8-10 feet of water, and maybe if he'd maybe climbed on top of that, it might have saved him. But he tried to swim to shore, and it was then after that, between all the drownings, the department actually initiated wardens had to know how to swim.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's why. That's why when you go for your warden test there, you've got to swim those couple of hundred yards and not touch.
Good. And then now in more modern times that I remember from being with the department since the 80s, 1992, I remember when this happened.
Yeah, William Hanrahan. Mm-hmm. He was a canine handler, and he had responded with his dog Major on a call on Route 43 in Starks. Mm-hmm. And another warden had confronted some hunters that he believed were hunting under the influence or were intoxicated at the time of the check, and they took off running into the woods. And Hanrahan, he searched the area, but he didn't locate the subjects. But when he came back onto the road and was headed to his vehicle, he suffered a heart attack and he died.
And Starks, that's in between Norgebrook and Farmington, right, over in that area?
That's over in that area, and I remember this very well because I was at that funeral.
Okay.
Yep.
Yep. And then last but not least, in 2011, and I knew Daryl personally.
Yep. Yep, myself. I worked with Daryl. We caught some night hunters when he was up in that Lincoln area, and Daryl was very proud to accomplish his status as a pilot. And on March 24th, 2011, Andrew Smart, another warden, was stuck in slush up on Eagle Lake. And Daryl had skis, and he landed. And they actually had to fly someplace else to get a come along. And they came back, and they got the snowmobile out. And the snow, that time of year, snow squalls are going, coming and going all the time.
Right.
And when they separated, big snow squall came in, and he never returned home. And his wife, which I know, she reported him missing. And then he had basically just crashed right into the ice.
Into the ice. Yeah. It was a depth perception thing. You think within the snow squall?
The snow squall, I'm certain had something to do with it.
Yep.
I don't know all the particulars from the investigation.
Yep.
We had a caller that was wondering if all this information that you have, is it compiled someplace that they can get their hands on? Or
some of it is and some of it isn't. If you go to the Warden Service website, there's some of it. Some of this stuff that I've mentioned tonight, and we won't get time to get through all of it. Obviously, a couple hundred years and within an hour's time, it just can't fit. But like I said, that's why I'm putting this book together, because there's some fascinating, interesting things that have been newly discovered. And part of that, even though I hate the computer a lot, all this computerized scanning and going, you know, people pulling out off the bookshelves or mm-hmm. out of the, you know, the dusty parts of the attics or whatever with the newspapers and the magazines and stuff. There's some neat things that have been discovered, and that's why I want to put it out.
So at some point that book will be available.
Yeah, at some point.
So but no time frame.
Not a time frame. It's in the works.
Oh, no, I was just asking because this gentleman lives off the grid, so he relies on what he's hearing on the air.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And some of this information, Dave, is in the main Game Warden magazine that you put out, too.
Yeah. I put that out for the main Warden Service Foundation, and it comes out twice a year through Police Publications. They really like us because... Obviously, we're a square peg putting into a round hole. We're different than the other police publications. Mm-hmm. And they're always telling me, geez, that picture, that's going to be my new desktop, you know, whatever. Okay. It's a Fondue or something. But I put that magazine out twice. I try to distribute it. A bunch of us distribute it all around. Mm-hmm. If by chance I do collect anything and everything that has to do with Warden Service, badges, diaries, patches, uniform parts, whatever from yesteryear. And my email is mwsfeditor@gmail.com. And I will travel in the state if it's something that I think could go into a museum or you know, help out with the history part of things, and I've already got quite a collection going.
Yeah, no, I've seen some of your collection in your presentation, and good stuff. And I know you've traveled far and wide to get it too, Dave. So.
I have, and actually, recently the Arthur Deeg drowning with Willis Parsons connection has been made with me for next spring to visit some of the Parsons that have some memorabilia, and they have a fellow that is storing that original canoe from that drowning.
Oh, wow.
And he wants to donate it.
Excellent. Oh, wow. All right. We've got just a little bit of time left, but I did want to mention, I'm glad you got in all the fallen officers, Dave. That's huge. Now I'm going to step back into time again and go back to 1888, where carloads of caribou were being seized from trains that were headed to the Boston market. Is that right?
Correct. The department thought that the caribou could take care of themselves out of all the big game animals, and they were the first ones to really go.
Yep.
But in 1888, they had so many shipments of caribou or big game that went to the Boston market. In 1894, it was estimated that 4,000 caribou were killed that year in the state of Maine and left the state.
And then the season was closed in 1899, is that correct?
Correct.
Yep.
And then by 1900, they were practically no caribou left.
Right.
A little too late.
Yep.
And here's a little trivia thing. Cornelia Crosby, Fly Rod Crosby, mm-hmm. is credited with killing the last legal caribou.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
And one other tidbit, in 1907, Maine passed the law that you could not hunt and fish on Sundays. So I'll leave everybody with that thought. Now we can fish on Sundays. We just can't hunt on Sundays. But I will leave that with everybody. And again, I want to thank Dave Georgia from the Maine Warden Service Historian, for coming on with us tonight. And all you listeners out there, thank you for listening to the Maine Outdoors.